go on to item six, the GNSO endorsements of the AOC review team volunteers. And I would like to ask Bill Drake to say a few words about the process that we've looked at.
Thank you, Stefan. This has been an interesting process. As people know, there was a draft proposal in December from staff on how this process would go forward. We filed public comments pertaining to the size of the projected size of the review team and so on. There was then a call for applicants in early February before the GNSO or other SOs, ACs, had figured out what their process was. We had to work under very tight time constraints, which changed several times. So there was a certain amount of complexity and constant adaptation. We ended up in February adopting a motion that actually had several different dates in it until things were resolved. So it was a little bit complicated at the front end, but we did settle in on a process that I think works. The assumptions that we operated on were that the council had a right to vet and select people that would represent it rather than simply passing along anybody off the street that might submit a proposal, that we had a responsibility to the selectors to limit the pool to something workable. We had no way of knowing how many applicants there would actually be, and we had to have a process that would be suitable to deal with any eventuality. At the same time, we recognized that because things were so compressed and we were having to make decisions in a little bit difficult circumstances, we would do essentially a one-off process. We would try to learn from that process this time with the first review team round, and we will devise a permanent process in April based on the lessons learned that we'll use going forward. So we had to define a process then that would work in a very compressed amount of time and would avoid too much politicization within the council, distributional battles over slots. You know, we wanted to ensure some parity among the different stakeholder groups, and at the same time allow some possibilities for open entry by other candidates, consideration of people who are not active in the stakeholder groups and so on. So the drafting team put together a proposal and an action plan. These were approved by the council, and basically the plan is as follows. It is on the web, on the screen there. Essentially what we did was to say that each stakeholder group has a right to endorse or have one fixed candidate that would go into the pool that would be forwarded to the selectors, Giannis and Peter, so there would be parity among the stakeholder groups. However, to be clear, there's no obligation on the part of a stakeholder group to endorse somebody for such a slot if they don't want to. At the same time, we want to allow the possibility for unaffiliated people who are not parts of stakeholder groups, not active, to be able to compete if they wanted to. So we decided there would be a fifth slot that would be a competitive slot for independent people. And because we thought maybe it would be good to have the possibility that a stakeholder group that had multiple good candidates might want to have a second person, if they can, considered in the pool, we decided to have a competitive slot that would be open to all the stakeholders to nominate somebody to, subject to a House vote. So we ended up then with a configuration where there are four, up to four potentially allocated slots, which would be included in the pool for sure, and then two other slots that would be voted on by the House for a total of up to six that we would give to Giannis and Peter for consideration for the review team. Again, we don't know how many GNSO slots there will be on the review team, so there's a lot of guesswork involved in all of that, but that's how we decided to do it. There are some details to the process that perhaps are worth mentioning very quickly. For the competitive slots that are open to election, the stakeholder groups can endorse up to two candidates for the open slot, the one that any stakeholder group can try to compete for. There's been some question as to what that endorsement meant. One way of thinking about it would have been that only those candidates who are endorsed stand in the election. This would have the effect of restricting the pool of candidates, which could be problematic. We have not settled on this finally yet, but what I'm hoping and expecting based on conversations to be the case will be that essentially endorsements by the stakeholder groups for those slots will be essentially taken as sort of indications of preference, but all the candidates whose names have been submitted will be included in the competitive pool for consideration in the vote. There is also an evaluation team. The evaluation team was created, again, with the expectation that we might have a large number of candidates that had to be vetted very quickly, and the council might not be able to get through all of them, so the evaluation team, comprising one representative of each stakeholder group plus an NCA, would do a quick assessment and perhaps give a recommendation to the council on a preferred candidate. And finally, there were diversity requirements built in. There are diversity requirements that pertain to both gender and geographic diversity, and if a certain threshold wasn't met, if the pool, now these, I should be clear about this, these apply if the pool allows. That is to say, if the pool does not provide pool of candidates, because you can't control who actually submits a candidature, but if the pool of candidates allow, then there would be a requirement that if the final vote after the first round yielded an insufficiently diverse group, the evaluation team would lead an effort to try to go back and massage things and come to a sustainable conclusion with everybody's support. So the deadline for submission of applications was the 7th of March. We received 12 applications, one of which we're holding aside because the person really prefers to be considered for security and stability review team later on. So essentially there's 11. By the 14th of March, hopefully earlier, stakeholder groups are supposed to notify the GNSO Secretariat of their nominations for the allocated slot and to provide guidance to their counselors on how to vote for the competitive slots. NCSG can announce we've already done that, and we have allocated to the allocated slot Willie Curry from South Africa, from the Association for Progressive Communication, and for the competitive slot, Mr. Haikir Rahman from Bangladesh. By the 14th also, the evaluation team is to report to the council on its assessment. On the 15th, the council will vote. If the council needs to, or the evaluation team needs to work things through on the 16th, that's possible, but we are due to submit our final selections to Yanis and Peter by the 17th. Last point I will mention, and then we can open it up to any questions, is to suggested voting process. We're still trying to reach closure, I think, in the council on precisely how the details will work. But essentially, what I'm imagining is that we will have lists of candidates for the two slots, two slots that are open to competition. And essentially, we will vote with people giving their first preference, and if there's somebody gets a simple majority of both houses, they win. If we do not get a successful outcome in the first round, we will then do a second round. Hopefully some people would then shift their preferences so as to put somebody over the top who was close but didn't quite make it. And if there are winners from those two slots, so we have a full slate of six, and if there's insufficient diversity by our metrics, then we would have to do an evaluation team assessment of that. On the other hand, if it turns out that nobody, after two rounds of voting, gets a simple majority of both houses, then the process would just stop there, and we would submit only those names that were allocated ahead of time to each of the stakeholder groups. So that, I'm sure, was a lot to digest in a very short amount of time, but it's the essence of the process. It's not actually unduly complicated once one sits and thinks about it. It's just a lot to hear at once. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Bill. And on a personal note, I know you've been working very hard on this. I want to congratulate you on the work you've done and thank you for that. Can I open this up for discussion? I see Tim has his hand up, and then Wolf. And then Zahid. Tim?
Thanks. Thanks, Bill. I just wanted to express that I appreciate the council considering some of the proposals or concerns that I expressed on the list. But I do realize that the council isn't in support of that, and that's fine. So I just want to let you know that the registrar stakeholder group is moving forward to make its selection based on the approved plan of the council. Thanks.
Thanks, Tim. Wolf.
Thank you, Stefan. I just would like to add something to what Bill Turn was talking about, to make it very clear also here to the public audience. This process, which was established by the GNSO right now, was done with a hot needle. So, and it's clear, very clear, that this process only applies for the first round of review teams. So the council and or the GNSO may come up with different kind of procedures for the next rounds.
Thank you very much, Wolf. Zahid?
Thank you. Just wanted to say on behalf of the BC that we would like to thank the other members of this drafting team for the hard work that they've done. And I think that a lot of this work was done basically trying to sort of address issues which we're not sure how it's going to happen because it's the first time it's ever was going to take place in this manner. But I'd just like to state and make the point about process that on reconsideration and closer inspection of this aforementioned process that developed in theory within the drafting team, when seen in light of the recent occurrences, it might become more transparent that certain criteria created certain amounts of difficulties given a smaller number of applicants than was expected. And in this regard, would I like to suggest the following for the future process, that we possibly try and simplify, create the process, make the process a lot more flexible, make sure that it's non-exclusionary so we get a lot more people into this pool, make sure that the qualifications being given are given more weight. This is not to say that the best efforts to achieve diversity should not be attempted, but this should not be at the cost of excluding qualified applicants. And very important to make sure that we have greater communication and outreach for next rounds and processes so we get more people to apply into the pool. Thank you.
Thanks, Zahid. Any other comments? Chuck, have you got your hand up?
I do, Stefan. Thank you. I also, like Zahid, want to thank the entire evaluation team because they have a big task that they're working on and have been working on in a very short window. And Zahid, just in response to your suggestions there, and I know you know this, one of the reasons why we made this process a one-time process just for the first review team is because we wanted to do a much more thorough job in future selection or endorsement of review team members. I do want to just bring up a few things that we, in our call on Monday morning for some of us, very early morning for some of us, there are a few things that we're going to have to take into consideration. To the extent that we talk about any candidate and make it before we vote any of candidates, we will need to do that off the record for the.
I understand the viewpoint that diversity requirements were problematic to some people. We had long conversations about this, of course, in the drafting team and the council as well. And obviously, when we put those in place, we were expecting a bigger pool of candidates than we ended up with, which, of course, makes application of these things a little bit difficult. The part I don't understand, could you clarify, mm-hmm. with some, what did you mean about people being excluded? How was anybody excluded from applying for candidature?
No, I'm not saying that they were, but I think maybe some of the criteria and looking at the diversity requirements, some people felt that there just wouldn't be any point in trying to apply at certain stages. I think that was something that we felt at least in the BC. And we just wanted to sort of caution that in all future processes, any criteria that would be aimed at sort of excluding people should be in some way avoided. And I'm not necessarily referring to the diversity alone. maybe other issues as well, some parts of some of our discussions, Bill, if you remember, in the drafting team. And it might not just be the diversity issue.
Okay, I would only point out that obviously requiring that not all the candidates be male isn't necessarily excluding anybody. Men can still apply, right? So, thank you.
Chuck, are you back? We have 5 minutes on this left, but Chuck?
Let me try again. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can now.
Okay, I'm real close to the Folicom. Again, my main point is that we will take some things off the record in our meeting to the extent that we are talking about individuals. So I want everybody to be clear on that. Glenn, a question for you. Is it possible in the recording to of the meeting to stop it periodically as we discuss the personnel?
Yes, it will be, Chuck.
Okay, so we need to be prepared for that. And then it would be helpful at the beginning of our call on Monday if we have a very nice, concise summary of the stakeholder group recommendations and the total candidate pool, just to facilitate everybody's work on that. Now, the last thing I want to suggest is that to the extent that stakeholder groups and the drafting team get their work done earlier than Sunday the 14th, if you can send it to the council list earlier, that would be much appreciated, because for some of us, we're going to be getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning and may not see any last-minute things that are on there. So, again, use as much time as you need, but if you can send your results to the council list early, that would be very much appreciated. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Chuck. Christina.
Just a logistical suggestion that I'm hoping we can think about between now and Monday, and that is, I think in light of travel time and time shifting that we've all done, to the extent that we could really strive to have our call on Monday, in which we do our final selection, be completed within an hour. I know that personally, I know that I'll have to drop after an hour, and I suspect others will as well.
Thanks, Christina. Any other comments on this? Or can we move on? Seeing no further comments, just to let you folks in Reston know, I've been told by the technicians here that the Polycom is the thing that's causing the problems that we're having. So if you can just speak from a personal phone directly, that would help. Let's move on to item 7. The Registration Abuse Policy Working Group Draft Report, which I believe Marika Greg Aaron is going to give. Is that correct? Yeah. Okay, so it's coming up now. Greg? Are you on the line?
This is Greg Aaron. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Can you give us a report on the RAP WG?
Yes, I can. Thank you for having us. Marika, if you can drive the slides. Why don't we move to the first one? This working group has delivered its initial report last month for about 10 months of work. The group's charter was to examine whether there were deregistration abuses that needed attention. Charter included a request to create a definition of registration abuse and also examine some of the contours for policymaking. This is a pre-PDP working group, and we'll be discussing some of the tentative recommendations that have come out of the group. Next slide, please. And as I said, these are some of the general charter objectives. Next slide, please. The group spent a lot of time working on definitions. And the definition you see on the slide did receive unanimous consensus from the members of the group. And abuse is defined by this group as an action that is causing actual harm, substantial harm, or is a material predicate or contributor to such harm, and is illegal or illegitimate, or is otherwise contrary to the intention and design of the stated legitimate purpose, if that purpose is disclosed. The notes are part and parcel of the definition. It's very important to define the party being harmed and the substance and severity of the abuse. And just as a note, the predicate is an enabler. Let me give you an example. The GNSO has created many several consensus policies over the years relating to registration abuses. For example, the misuse of WHOIS data is considered an abuse for some obvious reasons, such as the harvesting of personal information and spamming. We have transfer policies that are designed to curb abuses and allow registrants to move their domains to the registrar of their choice and so forth. In a lot of these cases, these definitions of abuse have been met. The harms have been identified, and in some cases we've had to deal with the intention of design of stated legitimate activities. An example was the ad grace period abuses that were eventually dealt with by the excess deletions fee policy. Next slide, please. One of the issues that the working group wrestled with was understanding and differentiating between registration abuses and abuses surrounding the use of domain names. In general, a high-level layman's description of this is that ICANN and the GNSO make policies regarding registration policies. This does not just include the creation of domain names, although that is an important one. The registration activities include transfers of domain names, policies around the deletion and redistribution of domain names, the provision of registration information, i.e. WHOIS information, and those kinds of activities. The issue came up whether activities unrelated to those are within the scope of policymaking. There was a statement in the issues report by staff in the General Counsel's office that uses of domain names unrelated to registration activities are out of scope. So the group spent a lot of time looking at that issue. As I mentioned, registration abuses may therefore occur at various points in a domain name's life cycle. And use issues may concern what a registrant does with the domain during its lifetime or the service services that are operated on the domain. For example, there are many services that one can run on a domain name, subdomains, email, websites, so forth. And then there are many social uses, using the domain name for speech and expression and all the other things you can do with websites, email, and so forth. Next slide, please. As part of the charter, the group developed a list of issues to explore to determine whether they were or could be considered abuses. And you see a list of those there. And one of the discussions was any of these within the definition of abuse? Did it meet that definition? Also, was it how was it related to a registration issue? And there is a long list of them, and we'll be going through just a few of them in depth in this slide presentation. Next slide, please. Okay. We're going to go through the recommendations in order of consensus level, beginning with those that received unanimous consensus by the working group. This first one is that the group recommends the initiation of a policy development process to look at the current state of the UDRP. Cyber squatting was identified as a problem, and there was some discussion about how the UDRP is a policy that's now 10 years old, and it may be appropriate at this time to look at the current status of the UDRP, how it's addressed the problem of cyber squatting. There have been complaints over the years about some of its insufficiencies or its unequal application. So this is a recommendation regarding basically a review of that policy. Later we'll talk about other rights protection mechanisms. Next slide, please. The malicious use of domain names includes activities such as phishing, the distribution of malware, and those kinds of criminal activities. These are certainly of interest to the community, and there are some limited but notable intersections between those activities and registration activities. For example, it's been noted by many experts that criminals often fake their WHOIS information. The group unanimously endorses the idea of the creation of some non-binding best practices to help registries and registrars address the illicit use of domain names. And the group suggests that ICANN is a good place to do this. This is where the community comes together to discuss these kinds of issues, and would like some formal support to run a group to look at these activities. The idea is basically to codify some practices that parties can then use to strengthen their own knowledge and responses to these issues. For instance, practices for identifying and investigating common forms of malicious use, and advice about crafting terms of service, and practices for identifying stolen credit cards and other credentials. Next slide, please. And those are some of the other topics that might be addressed by that effort. There was an unanimous consensus recommendation to look at the issue of WHOIS access. Now, WHOIS access concerns the basic ability of people to obtain or access WHOIS data. This is therefore different from the other WHOIS areas that the GNSO Council is looking into. The council has, for example, requested some studies on the accuracy of WHOIS and the use of proxy contact data in WHOIS. But what the working group discovered in its research is that basic access to the information is a problem. It appears a number of registrars, for example, are not adhering to their existing contractual obligations, and there may be some additional contractual obligations that need to be considered. For example, with .com and .net data, if you go to a registrar's port 43, who is, you can get one set of information for a domain name, but if you look it up on their web-based who is, you will get different information for that same domain name. So the feeling was Whois accuracy and proxy data and other things are important, but that's outside of our work. The GNSO should continue its work there. But if one cannot access Whois information or cannot get to it on a reliable and consistent fashion, that is a problem. Next slide, please. There is also a separate recommendation that the GNSO request that the ICANN Compliance Department publish more data about this issue on at least an annual basis. And that data should include the number of registrars who show a pattern of unreasonable restriction of access to port 43, Whois servers, and also the results of an annual compliance audit regarding contractual Whois access obligations. The idea here is to provide a survey and some reliable information to the community to help us understand what's going on out there in the world. Next slide, please. There was consensus to look at some other issues. One is fake renewal notices. The group began by recommending that the GNSO refer this issue to the ICANN Contractual Compliance Department. The fake renewal notices are notices that are sent to registrants, perhaps not by their current sponsoring registrar or a party claiming that a domain name needs to be transferred. Sometimes these letters come from resellers. First, we want to see if these kinds of issues are enforceable. The second recommendation is conditional. Perhaps after that issue is looked at from a compliance viewpoint. And then perhaps the group recommends that the initiation of the PDP to look further into this issue. Next slide, please. There is a unanimous consensus on a couple of issues, and the group decided that there is not enough evidence at this time that there are abuses taking place. One is domain kiting. This is different than pasting, but kiting is the creation of a domain name, the deletion, and then the renewal of that same domain name by the same registrant in the ad grace period. Front running is an activity that's been looked at by the SAC and some other parties within ICANN. It's using information such as Whois lookups to preemptively register a domain name. After the group looked into these issues and researched them, it's unclear to the group to what extent these are a problem or to the extent that they are happening, and so the group does not recommend policy development at this time. Next slide, please. There's also kind of an overall recommendation from the group about reporting. When one is looking at problems and potential abuses, reporting is the way that we find out about those issues and compile statistics and facts about them. The group does recommend that the GNSO and the larger community in general keep in mind that reporting is very important and the creation and support of uniform reporting processes is necessary. Next slide, please. To go along with the recommendation for some best practices, the group also makes a general recommendation about the collection and dissemination of best practices. We do recommend that the GNSO and the larger community think about the creation and support of structured funded mechanisms for both the collection and ongoing maintenance of best practices. Again, the thought is that this is a community where parties come together. They can be very effective at sharing information and ideas, collating those for the groups who may want to use them, and then maintaining those over time because, of course, the Internet is a very fluid, rapidly developing medium. Next slide, please. There is rough consensus in the group to make no recommendations regarding several classes of activities. Gripe site domains are domains that may use a brand name and are used to complain about that brand or company. Deceptive domain names may use a trademark name to entice people to visit that site. We decided not to recommend that there be special treatment for those in the UDRP, and the group is generally in agreement that the UDRP is already used and it's an appropriate way to deal with infringing names. And offensive domain names were domain strings that may be offensive to some, including pornographic references, but we did not feel as a group that carve-outs for those and special treatment of those are recommended. Next slide, please. The group also turned down a proposed recommendation to develop best practices for registries to restrict the registration of offensive domain strings. There was strong support for that, but also opposition. An alternate view in the minority was that the registry should develop best practices to restrict the registration of offensive strings in order to mitigate potential harm to consumers and children. Next slide, please. There is also strong support but significant opposition to a proposal to create an issues report to examine whether a minimum general baseline of registration abuse provisions should be created that would apply to all in-scope ICANN contracts, registry and registrar contracts specifically. And if it was created, how such language would be structured to address the most common forms of registration abuse. I believe the idea here was to create some general language that could be then applied to a number of situations that arise now or in the future. There was also opposition to the idea. There was a feeling among those members that it is very difficult to predict future problems, that general language or general situations may not be predictable, and that in general the consensus policy process should be used to solve specific problems rather than trying to solve general problems. Next slide, please. there was a second cyber squatting recommendation, but there was no consensus on it. The group split almost evenly on it. And that recommendation was for the initiation of a policy development process to investigate the appropriateness and effectiveness of how any rights protection mechanisms being developed elsewhere in the community, specifically in the new GTLD process, can be applied to the current GTLD space. So some of those rights protection mechanisms include the universal rapid suspension and a trademark clearinghouse. So there is the group is split 7-6 on that, with the six members saying that the initiation of that process would be premature as those mechanisms are still developing and their effectiveness and consequences are currently unknown. The small minority suggested that discussion of those RPMs should continue in the new TLD process, and experience with them should be gained there before considering whether they're related or appropriate for the existing GTLD space. Next slide, please. So those are the main recommendations. The public comment period for this initial report is open through March 28th, and that forum for comments is up on the ICANN website at this time. The initial report is available at the location on screen and has been translated as well. After that public comment period closes, the working group will go through the public comments, discuss them, integrate those into its report with any revisions the group feels necessary, and we would like to have our final report published in advance of the next ICANN meeting in Brussels. And at that time, then the Council will have the final report and discuss the final recommendations that result. So I'd also like to take this opportunity to thank our staff support during our work, especially Marika Konings and Gisela Gruber-White. And I'd like to turn the floor back to the Council for any discussion.
Thanks very much, Greg. There's not much time left on this item. Just wanted to point that out, but I would like to open this up for questions. I know both Wendy and Debbie and Mary have raised their hands. Can I ask you to keep your comments brief, please?
Thank you. Wendy here. I wanted to thank the group for distinguishing between registration abuse and use abuse. I think it's, I would say that only the abusive registration falls squarely within ICANN's jurisdiction. And while I support ICANN being a forum for the discussion of best practices, I think it's important also to recognize that registrants of domains need protection against the abuse of discretion by a registrar to too easily terminate a domain registration. And so I would not support a mandatory best practice allowing a wide range of discretion to suspend domain names for malicious use.
Thanks. Debbie, were you next?
Thank you. Just briefly, I just wanted to applaud the efforts and the activities of this work group. I have a slightly nuanced view, my colleague to the left. nonprofit organizations are sadly the victims of DNS abuse and would welcome best practices that would support our efforts in the and very important work that we do online and using the internet to accomplish its very important missions, and look forward to hearing more about that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Debbie. Mary.
Again, very briefly, and echoing the thanks of my NCSG colleagues to the working group, although our stakeholder group obviously has not had the chance to discuss the report thoroughly, I can say that the recommendation for the issues report with regard to the UDRP and cyber squatting will be welcomed by quite a few of our members, and we look forward to cooperating and putting in our input in that regard.
Thank you, Mary. Margie, you wanted to comment.
Yes, I wanted to comment on the scope issue. Just to clarify, in the issues report, the language that Greg referred to was specific to a particular section of the registry agreement and the registrar agreement. There may be other ways that these issues couldn't be in scope, but it's something that needs to be further evaluated once we know the types of issues or potential policies that may come up. So I just wanted to make it clear that there is possibility that the scope is broader than what was suggested.
Thank you very much. Rafiq?
So I agree with the Wendy statement about domain use, and I am not sure how to define the abuse and fraudulent use of domain names, and I am kind of afraid that it can be used as it's not really, it remains undefined as a tool for censorship.
Thank you. Marika, I think you had one last comment you wanted to make.
Yeah, this is Marika. I just wanted to point out for those of you that are interested to hear more about this or share your views and points on these topics, there will be a public information session later this afternoon from 4 to 5:30 in this room. So we hope to see you all back there.
Thank you very much. Any further comments on this? Then I suggest we move on to the WHOIS studies. Liz, you are about to give us a very short presentation, I believe.
Very short. Okay. Is that okay? Okay, thank you. I'm Liz Gaster. I have been asked to do a very abbreviated update on WHOIS studies, so I'll both talk quickly and try to keep it short and encourage anyone who has questions or interests to contact me after to save time. I'm going to be giving you an update on several studies that the GNSO requested staff to look into. I want to just be sure to differentiate these studies from the compliance study on WHOIS accuracy that was recently posted on the 15th of February for public comment. That is a compliance study with a deadline, I think, of 15 April, and the purpose of that study was to basically do a baseline measurement of what proportion of WHOIS records are accurate, and it defines some barriers to accuracy. One thing I do want to say about that study in the context of GNSO policy is that I do think there is some interesting information and conclusions there that might be of interest to this community in terms of future policy making. The reason that the GNSO embarked on looking into studies of WHOIS is because WHOIS has been debated for a very long time. There are lots of conflicting views about how WHOIS policy should be changed, and there hasn't been any significant change to WHOIS policy for a long time. So the hope of the GNSO in suggesting that we look into these studies was to provide a factual foundation for future policy making. For that purpose, the compliance study, again, might be another tool or set of information that might be useful to all of you. So March of last year, and then again in May, the council asked us to look at five study areas. And so I'm going to quickly run through those five study areas. The first one is, who is misuse? This involves two possible studies to assess whether public who is significantly increases harmful acts and also assesses the impact of anti-harvesting measures. The approach we took to this study, again, the council asked us to look at what the costs and feasibility were to conduct the study. So this study has not been commissioned yet. The state where we're at is that we used an RFP approach to ask qualified researchers to help us figure out how much it would cost to do these studies and potential feasibility issues. So we got some good responses from researchers. We're going to be during the September-October timeframe, and we're summarizing and analyzing those that information now, and we will be providing a report by mid to end of March for the council that will describe, you know, how much the study roughly would cost to do and our assessment of its benefits and feasibility. So stay tuned for that. The next area, the second area, was a who is registrant identification study, which looks at how registrants identify themselves and who is, to what extent the domains are owned by businesses or used for commercial purposes but may not be clearly identified as such in who is. Perhaps user's identity is obscured or suggests that they're a non-business entity. We also used an RFP approach to come up with cost and feasibility for this study. Our analysis is also just about complete. We got five responses from interested researchers to this study. So again, just a couple more weeks and our analysis will be forthcoming on that study. The third area is actually a little more complex from the standpoint of conducting or analyzing the feasibility of a study, and involves two aspects of proxy and privacy services. The first really looks at abuse and the extent to which domains associated with illegal or harmful internet acts use proxy and privacy services to obscure perpetrator identity. We think this study seems technically doable. We haven't released the RFP yet. We hope to do that shortly. But it's definitely true that there will be the need for input from multiple sources of information and for some good community involvement in this in order to make it successful. So, again, this RFP has not been posted yet. Hope to do it shortly. And then we'll be using that information to develop cost and feasibility for a subsequent report that will be provided to the council at a later date. The second proxy and privacy area is an area we're calling reveal in shorthand, which would essentially measure proxy and privacy service responsiveness to requests to identify registrants. This study is difficult, we think, because it would require actual victims of actionable harm to originate reveal requests accompanied by reasonable evidence of harm. So we really need to assess further how we might approach this study to ensure that that it is feasible, and we'll be developing terms of reference for an RFP for that study at a later date. The fourth area of study has to do with the readability of non-ASCII who is contact information in who is. And this is really would involve a technical analysis of how various client-side software displays non-ASCII registration information. We've suggested that we put this study on hold for the time being because of the pending work of the Internationalized Registration Data Working Group that was convened by the board. It's a joint ESSEC and GNSO working group, and they are really looking closely at technical standards. And there have been a couple of presentations on the progress of that working group in other sessions. Hopefully you caught one of those, and so I won't provide any detail on that given the shortness of time. The fifth area of study is actually a very different kind of study. It was a study that the council requested of us in May of last year, and it's really to compile a list of potential who is service requirements, partly based on existing requirements
of registrars and registries that are in the RAA and registry agreements today. And then the second piece of it really tries to go back through all of the historical policy debates and also discussions about who is that have occurred in other fora to compile a list of potential requirements. And I do have a second part of my study that goes my presentation that goes into a little more detail about that study. Let me just briefly touch on the timeline and next steps. I think I've mentioned them for the first two areas. Again, we hope to have our report to the Council by the end of March. We'll hopefully be posting RFPs on the Proxy and Privacy Services studies, probably one in April. One I'm not too sure about, the Reveal study. I'll be providing you with information about that. I do want to emphasize before I move on to the WHOIS requirement study for a little more detail on that, that when I present this analysis to the Council, it's going to include the estimated costs of each of these studies. And they're not insignificant, just roughly speaking. Each of the two studies that I mentioned at first, the misuse study and the registry and identification study, will roughly cost $150,000 U.S. each to do. So that's a significant amount of money that it will be important for the GNSO Council to discuss and consider and definitely participate in the fiscal year 2011 budget process in terms of expressing their desires and expectations about those studies. I'd like to just quickly move on to a progress report on this service requirement study. This is a study that's being done in-house, so we're actually doing this study. The lead staff person on it is Steve Sheng, senior technical advisor in our group. He's provided the original council resolution from May, so you can see what the purpose of this is. And again, this presentation is available online, so I'm going to move quickly through it. The goals are posted on the screen, and I think it's just important to understand that when we talk about collecting and organizing a set of requirements here, we're not gathering policy requirements, and we're not recommending policy through these studies. It's really intended to inventory the data and supporting technology that would be needed to support and enable policies that have been discussed to be implemented, and I think that's a very important consideration once you see this report. The next couple of slides just list some examples of compilations that he has included in his report. I won't read them. They're on the screen. These are just examples of what's being included. And again, if you have any questions or would like to discuss any of this further, both Steve and I would welcome your input. And I just wanted to give you a sense of some of the topics here. This is a second page now I've put up of additional compilation that will be included in that presentation. The timeline for this presentation, we're hoping that we'll have a draft report also by the end of March for the Council's review, and we're really interested in making sure that this compilation kind of meets the Council's expectations for what they were looking for from staff, because this is kind of a unique kind of report, and so we hope we got it right. And also, one thing in the resolution urges us to make sure to get input from the other SOs and ACs, so when we turn the draft report over to the Council, we'll also be soliciting that input from the other SOs and ACs, and are very eager to get their input on that compilation as well. So we hope to release that final report by May 2010 based on the input that we get. And that concludes my abbreviated presentation, and I'm happy to answer questions to the degree we have time.
Liz, thank you very much for that. On a personal note, I also want to draw attention to a point that you made, which I feel is extremely important, which is the budget, the cost of the studies. You mentioned that these studies will cost $150,000 each in the region of. And I think that's an extremely important consideration for Council going ahead. Can I open this up for discussion? Steve, I'll get to you in a minute. If I can, let me just see if councillors want to comment first. Wolf, please.
Thank you. Wolf Ulrich Noben speaking from the ISP constituency. Thank you, Liz, for this comprehensive overview. I also would like to support Stefan in this sense with regard to the budget. So I would like, if possible, in the future, if you give those presentations, if it's possible, to outline some figures with regards to the budget. It means with regards to what was planned regarding those studies and what is the actual status on that. The council is supposed to be to act as a management body with regards to the PDP process. That means I assume we should give more attention in the future to all budget-related issues. And it would be nice to have more transparency in this respect. That means to know what was planned, as I said, and to know what is the status and where we are going to. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Wolf.
Can I comment on that, just briefly?
Sorry, Liz. Yes, absolutely.
Because I think Wolf Ulrich makes a wonderful point, and I just want to explain there is no funding for WHOIS studies currently in the fiscal year 2011 budget, and that was not an oversight. We've been talking about the need for these studies in our internal budget processes, or the expectation that there may be studies in addition to collectively with all of you. But there were a couple reasons for that. We didn't know exactly how much to budget. I mean, that was part of the reason why we went through this cost and feasibility RFP process, and I wouldn't have even been able to ballpark it without the help of experts. So that's one issue. I think another issue is that we didn't want to make any assumptions about what the council wanted to support. As many of you know, this has been a controversial issue, even the idea of conducting studies, with very differing views among constituencies and stakeholder groups within the council. So we thought it was important to get the information out there and get some collective council feedback before we made any assumptions. And then I think the third aspect really is that there are some budget constraints for 2011, and so it's going to be important to hear from the council and, as Wolf Ulrich says, kind of look at the budget and the council's need for, let's just say, extraordinary budget kinds of requirements in a holistic way.
Thanks, Liz. I think we also will need to look at staff resources, which is one point that you didn't mention, and which is something that I'm particularly aware of, and the fact that you might... I don't know how staff-intensive these studies would be, but I'm sure they would be a drain on your resources. Chuck, please go ahead.
Yes, following up somewhat on both what Wolf and Liz talked about, Liz and I have had some exchanges on this, and I think it's one of the questions that's important, Liz, to ask is, will your report be ready for the council at least 8 days in advance of our next council meeting in the first part of April, because it sounds like without some action on the part of the council, there may be nothing budgeted for these studies in fiscal year 11.
So if I can respond, yes, I'm hoping to. The studies are written, the analysis is written, and I'm just getting final internal review, and I expect to definitely meet the deadline of 8 days before the 1 April council meeting in sharing that report with all of you, and if I can do it sooner, I gladly will.
Thank you, Liz. Chuck, any further comments, or is...
Thank you. No, that's good.
Thank you very much. Steve, you had a comment. Steve Del Bianco from the floor.
Thanks, Stefan. Steve Del Bianco with NetChoice. I'm in the business constituency and have been active on the WHOIS studies. I want to acknowledge Liz and staff for the great work that's been done so far and looking forward to reading the analysis. But I do want to comment on this notion of the rhetoric of calling it expensive. I mean, we definitely need to figure out if we can afford it, where the money would come from, and whether the studies are worth it. But to characterize them as expensive, I think it misses the point of the fact that we need fact-based information to know what we're going to do on WHOIS. It was the lack of any fact-based information that caused us to spend 7 years debating what to do with WHOIS. What's expensive has been all the community time and staff time for the last 7 years because we didn't have fact-based information. That's sunk cost. I can't go get that money back. But I don't want to spend another several years debating policy on who is without any facts at our disposal. So in light of that value, they may be quote-unquote expensive, but they may avoid other expensive time and trouble if we can truly resolve some issues on who is and privacy, who is in access, and who is in accuracy. Thank you.
If I could just comment quickly, I might have used the word expensive, so you might be referring to me. And if I did, I'll just give you my thinking, which is that because of the amount of money it is, so we have 300,000 roughly, plus the potential when we get the feedback on the other two studies, just as a approval process within the budget within ICANN, that requires Board Finance Committee input and consultation with the board. So it just exceeds a threshold where, so it's a broader decision-making or discussion involvement that will definitely include the board as well.
Sorry, Bruce, I hadn't seen you there. Go on.
That's all right, I just appeared like magic. As a member of the board, and just to look at my perspective on the budget side, I would recommend, rather than trying to say you've got a budget line item for something as specific as an individual who is study, that the GNSO would be better off cutting a budget for the year that incorporates some funding for doing fact-based studies. You know, I agree as we've just heard, I think fact-based studies are important, and I think an appropriate budget for that would be a good idea. Then the council can then prioritise within that budget which studies give you the most return. So it sounds to me like you're getting into a chicken and egg situation. You're saying you've got no budget until the council approves doing a particular study. The council can't really approve a study if there's going to be no budget. So what I suggest you do is work out a budget for the year, have a look at your whole work program for the GNSO for the year. You should be doing an operating plan for the GNSO and saying, in the GNSO this year, we have this amount of staff resource and we have this amount of funding that we want to have for doing market studies or fact studies, whatever that number is, and that's what gets presented to the board as part of your operating plan. Then you can prioritise how much you want to spend and on what. So if you had a budget of, let's say it's $100,000, you could spend it all on one study, or you could spend it on four studies or five studies. They're obviously going to be smaller studies, and that's something that you need to manage. So work out a budget for your year, for the 1st of July 2010 to 30th of June 2011, work out a number with the staff that seems reasonable, and the staff will have to sort of battle this within the ICANN executive management team, because obviously there's lots of competing projects within ICANN, but try and get a number, and then the council then can manage within that number and work out what studies give the best return for that budget.
Thanks, Bruce, for those excellent suggestions. I would just like to point out, I don't want to get ahead of the agenda or speak for the prioritisation team people, but I know that in the work that they're doing, they did consider whether budget issues could be included in that or not. I'll let them speak to that later, but that was part of the things that were looked at. Wendy?
Certainly, regarding the study as well, I agree that facts would be helpful. This discussion and consensus building process has not always been a fact-based community, and without the commitment that the facts will actually influence the discussion, I would have a hard time supporting directing budget toward yet further studies.
Thanks, Wendy. Any further comments? So let's move on then to what we've just, the subject I just touched on. Jamie, are you going to give us a report on the WPM?
Yep, okay. Could I have the presentation, please? Well, first I must say that this group, this team, is not chartered with the prioritization of our work. It is chartered to devise a procedure and a model to propose to the Council, a procedure that will make the prioritization work of the Council as smooth, and I emphasize the term smooth, and efficient as possible. So let's go. Here we are. Well, first, why was this effort undertaken? There was a study that was presented by at Seoul meeting. Because of the pre-Seoul community symptoms, work teams were struggling to complete tasks. Some conference calls were canceled due to lack of participants, and this was a symptom of something problems that included prioritization. Please, the next slide. The study presented at Seoul, it presented that the attendance to the various working groups by the different constituencies was lacking, and we wondered about causes. Next slide, please. The conclusion of the study, and I will read it. There is clear evidence of a sporadic attendance and, in some cases, very low participation by some constituencies and inconsistent participation by others. So the questions that arise from that, next slide, please, and possible points, issues for study were four. How might the GNSO work be prioritized? If there is too much GNSO work, and if so, what might be done to assess the total capacity? And these two were chartered to the work prioritization model team. There are other two items that are not addressed by this work team. I quote them. If the constituencies were providing enough recruits to the groups being formed, and what levels of group participation should be targeted for each constituency? These are yet to be tackled by the Council. Next slide, please. Well, the report is that the WPM team was formed in early November. Our activities were to scope the effort. We had staff, and I would like to thank Ken Bauer for its marvelous work here. Staff presented a concept to the team, and we devised a six-step plan from concept to adoption of a model, and it was finalized a project list to present which were the projects that should be considered for prioritization. So to solidify the definitions on the factors to be rated and develop and test the rating and ranking methodology. This is where we spend the most of our time because we, in fact, we experimented inside the team these models. We intended to produce these test results and evaluate them, but, and maintain always the focus on outcomes, how the Council might use the prioritization outputs to address the workload concerns. Next slide, please. Well, as to now, we have reached some, we're pretty much at finishing our work. The project list is completed. We went through a model simplification that, in relation to the one that was presented by staff. Our focus was, we focused primarily on value as the main factor to be ranked by the council. We have a secondary factor that is could be difficulty worded as difficulty or cost, but more difficulty. And we have completed these definitions. The rating methodology was tested and adopted. It has a seven-point scale. We are proposing individual rating templates with an Excel sheet for every council member. Then a group. Then the council would collectively group and use a Delphi process using the Adobe Connect with polling features, with the polling feature, and in the maximum of three iterations, trying to find the range of median. For each project to be rated. Well, the outcomes we have reached some consensus until now. How this prioritization could be useful to the council? First point is education and transparency for all the councilor members and to the community. It's a way of the council to communicate not only work priorities, but what is in fact work in progress, and to establish a general organizational awareness and understanding of the work in progress at the GNSO. Besides, and this is a main expectancy from this work, is that it will help manage resource allocation, helping the council to redirect the limited resources, not only staff, but also the community and constituencies. Volunteers. This work will surely aid in our strategic management. Councilors may be informed by the project prioritization when discussing issues and voting particular motions on the relative importance of each project that frequently relates to policy making. Next, please, and I think this is it. Oh, next steps. We will finish methodology evaluation, and we are working on paper to include this prioritization work in the operating procedures. We intend to present this paper by to the council meeting on the 18th of April. We already decide that additional testing will be made we decide here in Nairobi that we will make the testing with the whole council, but it will be a first use. The first use of the model will be a preliminary one, and if but we are very confident that it will work smoothly. Well, we have this document is will be presented, and in the our work will be finished, we hope, by the 13th April, and we are preparing also besides this this document, the with the final model and methodology, some training materials to be used by the council in the first test that would not occur on the 18th. We devised that it will be needed a council meeting special for prioritization. A special meeting for prioritization. Okay. Please, next slide. Yeah. Well, I'm willing to. If there are any questions.
Jamie, thanks very much for that presentation. Are there any questions at this stage on this? Olga? Olga, can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Stefan. And I want to thank Jamie for making the presentation. I really appreciate that. It was supposed that I was going to make it, but I think remotely it would have been much complicated. One comment about some concerns about the time we are taking to provide our outcomes to the council. I think that we have been meeting weekly in a very small and dynamic working group. And in my modest opinion, our work and our testing and our exercise that Jamie has just described will be useful for saving time to the whole council, avoiding going through this test in the council. So we think our experience is a learning process, and the idea is to propose this to the GNSO as a prioritization methodology already being tested among us. And Jamie already gave us the expected delivery date, and I also would like to thank Ken and Liz, who have been so helpful in our working team, and also I would like to help the whole working team that has been going every week in this exercise. Thank you, Stefan.
Thank you very much, Olga. Any further comments on this? If not, then I suggest that we now go back to the agenda item on the VI working group charter. As we left things, there was some dilemma or some debate about the versions of Objective 5 that we have. I was just waiting for that charter to be put up by somebody. Yes, please.
Stefan, if I could.
Tim, yeah.
Jump in here.
I'd love you to.
You know, it would be helpful if we had just another 5 minutes or so. Would it be possible to move on to the open mic for now and then come back, or?
How much time do you need, Tim? Do you think 5 minutes?
Let's say 10 minutes to be sure.
So perhaps we could do it this way. Perhaps we could split the open mic, because I'm wondering if the people might not want to comment on the outcome of this as well. So I wouldn't like to push this to the very, very end. without giving people opportunity to comment on this as well. But perhaps we can start with 15 minutes of open mic and then go back to this and then finish with the rest of the time with the open mic. Is that okay for everyone? Good. So let's go to the open mic for 15 minutes. Glenn, can you keep the time on that, please? Thank you very much. Please don't forget to state your name and go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Hello, I'm Scott Seitz. I'm from the United States, and I'm now with .gay LLC. You may remember .gay from the introduction at the Sydney meeting about a year ago. I'd like to thank the ICON committee for their work and their efforts in bringing the GLTDs out to the rest of the world. As an outsider and new to ICON, I respect the process and the tasks laid out ahead of you. I've been brought into this process by Alexander Schubert and have become the co-founder and majority member of a partner, rather, in .gay LLC. I'd like to address an issue with the application process that concerns me. The section about morality and public order is in need of clarification. Although the gay community continues to grow and gain visibility throughout the world, there are still a few entities that would use, or misuse, rather, this section of your code to prevent .gay from launching, and we need clarity on this. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and welcome to the ICANN community if you're an ICANN newcomer. Any further comments? Please.
Yes, thank you, Stefan. My name is Barry Cobb. I'm part of the business constituency, speaking on my own behalf, and I was also a part of the vertical integration drafting team. I guess I'd like to just remind the council that if the whole issue of vertical integration was removed from the DAG or wasn't included in the DAG, we wouldn't be venturing down this road, at least at this point in time, of discussing and debating vertical integration. Unfortunately, at this point, we can't assume that it will be removed out, so we're stuck with where we're at today. So I'd just like to take the minute to comment that I implore the council to consider the second objective. And really, the only difference between the two objectives is the fact of conducting an analysis on the possible effects. During the drafting team, it was suggested that any kind of really in-depth study would take months, if 6 months, or a very long time, well beyond the stated duration of the working group. And I tend to disagree. I think we can determine, or the working group can determine, a solution that could help the working group make a better formed decision about vertical integration, and I think we can find a way in which to expedite and become much more informed and educated about the topic. And really, that's basically all I have, so just please consider that the second objective, and I think that we can find better information to help the working group. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So that's a comment, really, for the working group. Thanks very much. Any other comments at this point? Questions? Whatever. Seeing none. Tim, can you hear me? Okay, so why don't we do this? Why don't we go for a 5 minute break and come back and see where we are on the VI thing.
I just sent it to the council list, so a 5 minute break would probably be good to give everybody a chance to take a look at it.
That's great. Thanks, Tim. Let's break for 5 minutes. Come back at 11:35. Thanks.